This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
With Lee Chui Lin and Kelvin Yee, we've been talking about stimulus packages today. Just to really understand what they encompass, turns out a lot of different measures could fall under this, and it could come from a lot of different places. The point really is, when does it kick into gear, and at what point does the government think this is what needs to happen? So we're talking about this in relation to the fact that MATA, which is the Malaysian Association of Tourism and Travel Agents, I believe, have basically said that in order to deal with the impact that their sector is going to see, they would like to see something approaching a stimulus package. So we've been kind of examining whether or not that's a good idea, whether or not it's a good time to have that, and also what ways might there be to help out the tourism industry in a time that is pretty tough. So first of all, we have this from SK.
With some suggestions, which says that get those coach bus drivers to provide feeder bus service to commute workers to and fro from work. This will provide jobs on a win-win basis. And for the Prime Minister, who has visited Japan quite frequently, can Japanese tourists replace the tourism market? Logistics company is doing extremely well. Those in the tourist industry may help ease the staff shortage, waive hotel license fees, and lower the assessment rates.
So I think there are some ideas there in terms of employment. Certainly, for people who are worried about being out of jobs, there are some pretty solid suggestions in terms of, well, go to the industries that are doing well.
Yeah.
But I think overall, in terms of improving the outlook for tourism in the country, maybe these suggestions don't exactly fall into that, right? So it's more like dealing with the reality that tourism is not in a good place right now. So maybe temporarily you need to look to other pastures.
Yeah. And actually for what Lawrence Todd, our economist speaker said earlier, was also the fact that perhaps the smaller measures might be able to assist the current situation, right? Like if it does get worse, perhaps zero rating SST, or perhaps looking at reducing the departure levy and tourism taxes that are involved here might actually work better than a broader, larger stimulus package.
Wisely is messaging saying, I'm from the tourism industry. The inbound industry is suffering badly, where companies are taking measures such as pay cuts. The tourism ministry should have realised not to put all their eggs into one basket by focusing only on China. The government must provide stimulus plans, as margins are very thin in this industry. Waive taxes, tourism taxes, provide incentives to players for them to sustain and continue to market the destination to other markets.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it's also perhaps worth highlighting for the government, especially to put focus and to put out the message that, hey, we're doing quite well in handling this this outbreak right now. And it's actually more or less relatively safe to travel right here. And I think that might put at ease those coming from abroad and also those who might want to consider traveling locally and not, you know, and putting off decisions to travel internationally right now.
Wisely, actually, if you could let us know, I mean, thank you so much for giving us insight, I think, into the industry, but also if you could let us know, what are some of the other markets that you think are viable for us? You know, which other countries or which other tourists do you think would be as interested in our country as the Chinese market has been? Because we really have seen that influx. And I think many countries, we're not alone, many countries around the world have seen that influx of Chinese tourists and are now also probably in the same boat as us and looking around trying to say, hello, we can make things comfortable for you as well. Sorry, we didn't think about you before. But yeah, if you could let us know, that'd be great. And in general, if you want to weigh in either on the subject of how we can best communicate information during this time of great confusion surrounding the coronavirus outbreak, as well as stimulus packages and what we can do for the tourism industry, call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, it is 6:40 and we're going to be moving on to our next story, which is basically about how to teach kids about money and financial education and managing their spending. And that's coming because there was a report from Banama which spoke to some parents who have decided to give their kids their allowances through e-wallets, saying that they find it safer and they also use it to monitor their children's spending.
And it's also the deals that have convinced some parents to get their whole families on the bandwagon, the cashback offers, for example. And sometimes it's a bottoms-up approach where the kids give their parents advice to switch.
So I think what I found quite interesting here is the idea of keeping track of your child's spending. Because at least when I was a kid and I received my allowance, that was it. You know, it's just you get whatever it was that you were supposed to get that month. And then after that, it's up to you to kind of find your way through that. I don't really remember my parents having a sit-down conversation with me or asking me where and how I spent my money. Yeah. I mean, sure, sometimes if I rocked up at home with something that looked a little suspect, they might say, did you spend all your money on that? But beyond those conversations, we didn't really have anything more formal. You know, there wasn't a listen, you should allocate this amount for savings. You should spend this amount on food. Maybe don't spend so much when you're out with your friends. You know, there are all these avenues that I now realize we didn't really go down. And perhaps if I had been given my money through an e-wallet, they might have been a little more nosy and a little more involved.
Yeah, I think my financial training in that sense was more or less the same, right? There wasn't a concrete or detailed plan on how to learn how to manage your own money. It's always, well, you're going out, here's this amount of money, figure it out yourself. That worked to a certain point, but it wasn't necessarily the most effective way of teaching financial education. You know, if it was made easier to understand, then I wouldn't have to pick it up as an adult right now. I think it'd be much an easier transition to moving on to the other things of financial planning, right? So if I had the savings and everything locked down at a younger age, and I could move on to investments, I could move on to maybe getting a proper, better insurance plan, for example.
So we want to hear from you. How do you communicate with your kids about money? How do you teach them how to manage their spending? And how did you learn those skills yourself? You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
We'll be taking a deeper look at teaching children good financial habits, of course. And to help us with that, we have on the line Rajan Devadesan, Chief Executive Officer of RD Wealth Creation. Rajan, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Kelvin, hi, thank you.
Now, how can parents start introducing good financial habits in their children, and at what age can you start?
I think probably starting as early as 2 or 3 is possible. But from a practical perspective, in terms of actually giving them money, probably you got to wait till they're 5 or 6. My view is that while it's very obvious that money is not the most important thing in the world, parents can actually introduce good financial hygiene. And right now everyone's talking about hygiene because we've got to make sure we don't fall sick with the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. But good financial hygiene would actually allow proper values to be instilled in children using very basic personal finance lessons. So in my opinion, I think the key values that parents may want to introduce would include, number one, the world does not owe you a living. So you want to basically throw out the whole concept of having an entitlement mentality. Second, honest hard work is noble. One of the biggest regrets I have growing up is because having my father not allow me when I was in secondary school to go get a part-time job because I was perennially short of cash, and I didn't like asking him for money. I actually wanted to go out and earn money. But for some unfathomable reason, he said no. And I think that actually stunted my economic growth by quite a long time. I guess the third value would be you want kids to think that saving money is cool. Not so much spending money, but saving money is cool. And lastly, I think you want them to know that it is wise to have some level of charitable giving. So those are the four takeaways I think parents can actually inculcate in children if they put together a fairly simple system to try and manage money. When I have... Sorry, did you want to ask me something?
Well, no, I did just want to know. I mean, like you said, starting good financial hygiene at the ages of, say, 2 or 3 would be good. You know, you've kind of described the main lessons, and I just wanted to know whether those lessons were things that you learned at a young age as well, and, you know, how was that process like in your household?
No, I don't think I learned them very, very well. Like I said, I think my economic development was somewhat stunted. I mean, there were certain values that I saw portrayed in my mother and my father. My parents split up when I was one, so it was fairly interesting setup. But even then, I mean, there were many things that they did right, and I guess no one's perfect, and people try. And, you know, you can learn from people you love, both in terms of the positive examples as well as the negative examples. I think when I was young, both my parents and also very loving uncles and aunties used to occasionally like give us piggy banks and tell us, you know, it's very important to save money. And then if you're a cute, chubby kid carrying coins and, you know, someone tells you, okay, this is the slot that you need to drop the coins into, it's a lesson that you think about. But I wasn't taught a structured fashion, a structured manner of turning a simple piggy bank into a proper system. I only learned this much later. Now, my wife and I, we don't have any children, so you might be talking to the wrong person, but in my defense, I probably taught generations of young kids in 3 different countries over the last 35 years intermittently. And what I have seen when it comes to inculcating good financial habits in young kids is setting up a 3 piggy bank system. The first piggy bank should be earmarked for savings, the second one for giving, and the third one for spending. So let's think about a hypothetical example where a very young child is given, say, a 3 ringgit a week allowance, a very, very young child. And the allowance is specifically given in 3 1 ringgit notes. And if a child is then taught, okay, you take 1 ringgit and you put it into your savings piggy bank, you put the second one into your giving piggy bank, so that the child begins to think about people who are not as well off as him or her. And then the very last is, this is your spending piggy bank. Whatever is here, you can go and spend, you know, within reason. This system, what I call the SGS system, save, give, and spend, helps very young kids to actually allocate money in a structured fashion. And it also, I think, unconsciously introduces every single child to the concept that, you know, as soon as you receive some money, spending all of it is not a wise thing to do. So I think if a little child is guided in this way, it can be quite helpful. I have been in situations where I have actually taught this in juvenile workshops for kids, you know, ranging from maybe 6 to 12. I've had parents come in and sit at the back of the workshop, and some of the parents actually just catch the fire, if you like, and they go out and they set up 3 piggy banks, etc. And I've actually had a couple of them sort of scold me and say, you know, I had to increase my son's allowance because I had to make it a multiple of 3. But, you know, those sessions of being scolded came with a smile. So I think they actually benefited. When it comes to, you know, standard things like giving children daily, allowances, once they start going to school, whether it be kindergarten or probably standard one onward, I think if a child is 6 years old onward for a while, you probably only want to give daily allowances so it doesn't become overwhelming. By about the time of maybe standard 4, maybe when a child hits 10 years old, then I think you can begin introducing the idea of a weekly allowance, and then, you know, maintain that in the first couple of years of secondary school. And by the time he or she enters Form 3, say at the age of 15, then I think a monthly allowance is something that is very, very wise. You may remember that our grandparents, I think, actually had something known as an envelope system. And so for those who don't want to go out and get 3 piggy banks, a 3 envelope system would also work. The whole purpose is that the children must be taught to segment and channel their money, both the money they're given as well as hopefully money that they generate from part-time work, from additional chores. Obviously, you know, it's still Chinese New Year. I think... end of it is Chap Go Mei. Is it on Saturday?
Yes, I think so.
Right, okay. So it's still, people are still collecting ang paos. And then there's always birthday money and stuff. You can have Hari Raya money or Deepavali money or Christmas money or whatever else. So I think the three-way SGF system is really foundational, and I have seen it yield very good fruit. But there is one proviso. Mm-hmm. The whole purpose here is to actually garner solid, excellent character traits in children. And you don't want to raise, you know, rabid capitalists who only do things for money and, you know, don't have any sense of community. So the kids, I think, should be taught that they will not be paid for basic household chores. I mean, there are some things that should really be their basic responsibility. They should make their beds. They should maybe walk the dog, clean up after the cat, take out the trash, wash the dishes. Even if the family is wealthy enough to have a maid, I think it's important that the children do something. I've seen far too many spoiled brats who expect everyone to wait on them hand and foot. But once the foundational chores carried out, then I think children should be given the opportunity to earn more money if they want to. There can be odd jobs around the home. Initially, you don't want to let children out too soon, but you know, once they become confident and they're old enough to hold their own, then maybe they can go around the neighborhood and suggest to neighbors that maybe they can do some weeding or cutting the grass or whatever else. The whole purpose here is to actually help them to understand that having a work ethic, earning money through the sweat of your brow, is actually a really, really good thing. And when the child is, say, in secondary school, even if it's only Form 1, he or she is only in Form 1 or Form 2, the concept of university is becoming very, very real. And I think it's important for parents to have the conversation with the children, even if at a very young age, to find out whether or not, okay, are you going to go to university? If you do want to go to university, how are you going to pay for it? I can help you to some extent, but the responsibility is yours to study hard. You've got to earn scholarships. And this money that you've been saving in the three piggy banks, particularly the save portion, maybe a portion of that can go toward earning your degree. I think it's very important that parents make the children understand that when the kids go to university, they're not doing the parents a favor, that the parents themselves are there supporting them so they have a brighter future. The second element, the give portion, I think is very, very important. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all find reasons to complain, you know, saying that woe unto me, everyone else is better off than me, but that's really not true. Think about it. In Malaysia, it's almost unheard of for anyone to not have a specific eating problem, as in we've got way too much food. And yet there are other places where food is insufficient. And I think if parents inculcate a three piggy bank system and they focus then at the right time on the give portion, then they can very gradually introduce their kids to the concept of genuine charities. As the kids grow older, the parents can also point them to news reports of charities that have gone wrong, where, you know, so-called officers of particular charities have actually run off with the money. And in that situation, you want to teach the children, you know, you've got to be very careful with your giving money. You've got to make sure that you do your homework. And you have to realize that while you need to be wise, you also need to be kind. You know, hopefully a series of lessons like that will really help. I think the ultimate goal is for us to raise children who are kind yet wise, gentle yet tough. And I think as I said right at the very beginning, we want these children to realize the world does not owe them a living, which means you really need to eradicate the whole concept of an entitlement mentality. Does that help?
Yep, definitely. Rajan, thank you so much for all those tips.
You're very, very welcome, Calvin. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Rajan Devadasan, Chief Executive Officer of RD Wealth Creation.
Yeah, and in line with that, we would like to hear from you about whether or not that's a system that you've instilled in your kids. How did you yourself learn about managing your spending? How are you trying to do that right now? Because it can be something that I think needs to happen at a younger age than most of us expect. Like we heard they're 2 to 3 years old. I think that, for me at least, was younger than I thought.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to weigh in, you can call us 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to head to the news and then we'll be back after that to continue the conversation and also to talk about Brexit. So that's coming your way. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.